This podcast series is brought to you by Elekanyani Ndlovu. For more details, visit eleandlovu.com.
My name is Elekanyani Ndlovu and welcome to Womanifesto. A lot of literature has been produced over the years about the topic of spiritual, social, and the practical benefits of giving. Interestingly, the concept of giving is one of the most recognized acts of humanity in existence today. Yet, the percentage of the world's population who are in dire need of assistance still remains unacceptably high. Access to Womanifesto is freely available to anyone who wants it. I wanted to give something to people that in turn can be paid forward. Womanifesto has been a fun and fulfilling experience for me since episode one. And at the heart of what I hope to do with this is for each person who listens to every episode to have a deep desire for self-mastery. I believe that self-mastery is the foundation to service. Mastering yourself is true power, and through that you can harness and realize your full potential and possibly focus on things beyond self for a deeper purpose, to act on compassion and care for the next person. My guest is on that journey. Her work really talks to something I truly believe in, which is enlightened self-interest and shared value. She embodies the notion that if you do for others, you ultimately gain as a person. And I'm honored to have her on Womanifesto. She is a mother of five. She has five daughters. She is a sustainability consultant, an entrepreneur, a life coach, and a community change agent. Rayana, welcome to Womanifesto.
Thank you for having me, Ele.
You are in the clothing industry, and yet you say that you don't sell products, but you sell consciousness, connectivity, and continuity. That's beautiful. How do you do that?
And we conscientize our client around the back process and the backstory that you, through buying this garment, you're actually allowing for a woman sitting in Dobsonville to feed her kids, to put food on the table. It's as basic and simple as that. So my model I call the sacred economy, because it's about women coming together to share God-given talents. Because at the end of the day, when we have nothing, we have our hands.
Yes.
And we can look and see, how are we using our hands to be able to create something beautiful? I think that when I was working in retail, I always found, or in the factory environment for that matter, I always found that women coming to the industrial areas to work, leaving their homes early hours of the morning, you know, it just didn't sit right for me. And I felt that, what if women were able to work from home? Well, here we are, COVID 2020.
Yes.
What if they were able to work from home a lot more, be closer to the family environment, manage that better, and still be able to have an income?
And that's true value. That's true shared value. And the impact you make in people's lives and in changing how they lead their lives and what they're able to do and the quality of their lives is incredible.
Because that's what we do as women, you know, and that's exactly the business model. It's about buying from each other, sharing our skills, and also allowing it to be a win-win situation.
You spent over 30 years in the fashion industry before you conceptualized Sari for Change. 30 years is a long time. What are some of the things that you had to do to get to this point?
It's a long story. And going back to the beginning, being a young fashion designer and really always feeling I wasn't confident enough to launch my own range in fashion and to really go on my own. So I took the route of interning and working with companies for a long time so that I could gain the experience. And I've been in the fashion industry for more than 30 years, and really from being a buyer to being in retail. I've really covered every single position in the industry itself.
Yes.
And then, of course, that time dawns on you where you have to fulfill your dream.
What was the dream?
My childhood dream was always to have my own clothing boutique. And that's what I did. I started off my first one in Kenya, in Nairobi, because I was living there at the time.
Kenya is such an amazing place. The people, the vibe. I really enjoyed being in Nairobi when I visited Kenya. And working there must have been an amazing experience.
So it was a real African affair, because I loved the raw talent of the Kenyans. And I really felt that there was so much that we needed to show the world. And that's exactly what I did. We started creating local products, but also the demand at the time was for my client base to want to look for imported garments. And I traveled the world sourcing garments, and I really, you know, loved what I did, had a beautiful client base, and then it was time to come back to South Africa.
Yes, home will always be home. I know you opened up your second boutique. Where did you open up?
I opened up my second boutique in Johannesburg.
I suppose Joburg is just as exciting as Kenya. The potential. Were you still importing?
Still importing. That was the business model. It was retail. It was a very successful business that I had.
You were traveling the world, running successful businesses. And then what happened? What shifted?
You know, you tick the boxes, and so you've done your dream, you fulfilled your dream, you have this boutique. What's more? What's next? And, you know, that itch starts. And that's when I felt that I wanted to do something more meaningful, and started looking at local production and the skills that we have locally.
Yes.
And realized that there was not enough training and fashion incubations to be able to bring it to the level that I needed in my boutique.
Last week, I spoke about creating time to get to your dreams, because once you get your own rhythm and do you and create space to think beyond self and start thinking about meaning, a deeper purpose, you position yourself to serve. How did Sorry for Change come about?
So Sorry for Change really came about looking at fabric as a resource. As you know, that is the biggest cost in the whole process of production.
Yeah. Why sari as a fabric? Why does it work?
See, it's 6 meters of beautiful silks and chiffons. It's colorful. And I think for who my client base was, it spoke to us. It spoke to us about culture and tradition and how people could wear this differently. And so it was a perfect fit.
And that's what innovation is, right? Thinking about how we do things differently. It really is such an interesting concept, because by trying to figure out what it is you have that you can work with, the sari emerged as a resource. How did you get it to work?
Did a lot of R&D and put our feelers out. And one day we shared my concept with an organization, and they loved it. And the next thing, it just rained saris. I didn't have the model really as yet.
Yes.
I was like, oh my word, be careful what you ask for. Here I have, it's raining saris. What am I going to do?
Isn't it amazing that once you know what you want to do and you commit to it, that the provision comes? I mean, it does not mean that everything will go smoothly, but at least you get what you need to start.
Yeah, you've got to be careful what you throw out there. The minute we had buy-in from an organization in terms of us being part of the service project, which meant that a lot of individuals were able to donate their saris to us. So we're receiving the donations. And in turn, we train the women to produce a garment. And that training takes quite a while, because the saris are very difficult to actually stitch with. It's been a real labor of love, and taking the saris into the townships has been also, you know, another experience, because now we could actually cross-pollinate and share each other's stories around heritage, and then you realize that we actually have so much in common.
if you never really got to a point where you felt that you were ready to do something more meaningful, to do something with a deeper purpose, there would be women out there whose lives would still not have changed.
Yeah, sorry for change. 6 years later, here we are doing upcycling as well as upskilling women with the necessary skills to produce a garment from start to finish, because that's what I found was really the issue. When somebody works in a factory environment, chances are they would focus on one aspect of the garment and not actually stitch the full garment.
Yeah.
And here we were able to go through the processes in the manner it needed to be so that there was a complete garment at the end of it.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
But by the time they'd done what I call an incubation, which is really 9 months, that's the time it is to have a baby, right?
Yes, and so yes.
By the time they'd done with their training, they are able to produce independently, because that's the idea. It's to come in, get the skills, but to be able to produce from their own spaces. So that really was my vision for I'm Sorry for Change, was to be able to train women so that they could become our suppliers, and we then focus on the marketing aspect of the products.
The ladies get to work from home. It's amazing. And with over 40% of our households in this country being women-led, having that level of flexibility to be able to look after your children and still earn an income is incredible.
And I've seen this firsthand in the townships where we work. You know, it's we're looking at unemployed moms most of the time, and they just lost hope. And we say to them, you know, just making something so beautiful, being able to receive the money for it, your son or your daughter is looking at you differently, because you now, you don't need a donation. You don't need a handout. So let us just give each other a hand up.
I really believe that it's important that we have perspective, to realize that we have. Perspective is important. And when you have privilege, you have a responsibility to share.
That's the difference. And so the whole share, you know, it's about everybody earning a piece of the pie instead of us sitting with the bigger profits and them, you know, basically where they stay as employees.
Yeah.
I needed for them to take ownership of the project as well. And that also meant, because we were receiving so much of saris, that meant there was always an excess of fabric. They could help themselves to it. And if they felt that there was a design that they needed, they could find a market within the township or where they were, in the church, in their community.
Yes.
We gave them enough business skills to be able to run their own little businesses at the same time. So it was not just waiting for Sorry for Change to give them those orders, but also for them to constantly develop themselves and find a market for their products. And sometimes it wasn't the saris, it turned out to be earrings or the duk or something which was manageable for them. And in this way, I felt that they were earning all the time. And, you know, it wasn't that sitting and waiting what's next. And they were able to develop themselves as well entrepreneurially. And that's exactly how it panned out. I mean, I have women producing in from Dobsonville to Yeovil to Hillbrow, Diepsloot, Cosmos City. They situated all over in Johannesburg, and they would have come out of the incubation or would have spent time at the factory training. And they then become our suppliers, and they don't have to worry about how are they going to find the clients.
That's amazing. And what are some of the challenges that you guys face with this project?
Well, I think if you ask that question in COVID, everyone is going to say cash flow. But, you know,
true.
But the reality is I'm always looking at how do we access new markets, and how do we develop products that is relevant to now? So COVID came, and then obviously it was masks that we were making. Everybody was looking for loungewear. What does loungewear look like? Because now you want to do a Zoom meeting and, you know, still be at home. And we could gap in and become very flexible, unlike retail stores, because we had in-house production and we could rally the women together remotely from the spaces they were, and basically make sure that they would receive the saris so that they could continue production from where they were, and hence they could earn. So coming back to your question, the challenges are around logistics, because women are spread far. So sometimes we would meet at odd places where it's a halfway mark, you know. I also have a high courier bill because, and I can't always courier to the ladies in the township. So that's an issue for me. But also we're receiving saris all the time. And so it's, you know, who's collecting, who's delivering, you know. So that is my biggest challenge, is around logistics of receiving the saris, and also ensuring that our ladies well stocked with the saris that are coming through in orders all the time. Once the ladies are able to sit and work in their own spaces, there's no need for them to come into the factory environment. So there isn't a common space that they're at unless it's training. So it's really around transport and logistics in that way. Yeah.
And how have you kept going for 6 years? 6 years is a long time for a project like this, and with interfaces with a lot of women.
So my main company is called Harem Consult, which really is about, I'm a life coach. And so I've combined my retail skills and my clothing skills together with my coaching. And so if I'm succeeding as a brand, I feel that I'd like to see other brands succeed as well. So I offer the service. We are working with other brands. We manufacture for other brands as well. So a lot of times, you know, you'll find Harem Consult having to gap into Sorry for Change to keep it going in terms of cash flow.
Yes.
But right now we are sustainable. We're working on orders for Denmark, the USA. And also, I think with COVID, we've also managed to create a bigger footprint online and have a bigger presence online. I've managed to keep a good presence of our online sales locally, but I've also been working for looking at the international markets, and that's going well. Sustainable fashion is actually huge in Europe, as you might know. Mm. And in South Africa, people are becoming conscientized towards it, but not at a fast rate, you know. So, but it's better than where it was, and it's growing. It's growing. Sustainable fashion is trending. Everybody is starting to think, who made my clothes? What is the process around this? What happens if I'm buying an upcycled or recycled garment? You know, we're preventing the percentage of fabric going to landfills. Our carbon footprint is being reduced. So there is, you know, a kind of awareness around the green economy and how the fashion industry is playing their role. And I think that as that becomes more and more on the increase, people will look and understand who they're buying. And also, you know, the whole campaign around buying local, supporting local businesses, we are part of that narrative.
And you're right. I suppose the outcome is the impact that Sari for Change has. And that's the value. And when we start thinking about what we're consuming and where it comes from and the impact of our choices, I think it goes a long way. So hopefully our country picks up in terms of that trend.
You know, Ella, that is such a relevant point, because in reality, we are so rich in Africa. We have the resources. We have the talent. Mm. We have the youth. And if only we will believe that, okay, support each other to be able to build an economy that is based on sharing and rather looking at how can we do this differently, you know, creating our own narrative instead of constantly copying from the West or, you know, and especially in the fashion industry. I mean, it's big, okay? Yeah. We know that a lot of our clients would prefer a designer label coming from Europe, okay, versus a local brand. And I understand that. But if you're buying from us, you're also making sure that we're constantly improving and improving our quality so that our value goes up. We can become global players.
You have managed to create shared value. The women gain, you gain, other people get to contribute to making this world a better planet by contributing fabric. It gets recycled. It's a beautiful story. And thank you so much for sharing this beautiful story with us.
I think that really my message goes out to women that are really pondering about what's next for them. Right now, COVID has brought so many different challenges to our door, but we have to keep the hope. And if you have a skill or talent, get in touch with somebody who's in that business. That, because I feel if we can mentor and coach women through the difficulties that they're experiencing, it goes a far way in them just moving a little bit from where they are and taking them from hopelessness to hopeful and build the economy together.
It's a beautiful story, and I think you are doing absolutely amazing work. So thank you for that, and thank you for availing yourself.
Thank you for having me, Ellie.
When looking at the African reality and considering how many women find themselves with limited resources, this story is particularly inspiring. It highlights once again just how important agency and access is for the collective, not simply the individual. These women are a great pillar of leadership, tapping into networks and building their own, something many of us often fear to do or even overlook. We are our own greatest asset, and the community we build with one another will bring us closer to the futures we want to actualize for ourselves. Sari for Change is a beautiful example of not only acknowledging one's privilege and access, but how one can enable the access and agency of others, putting people first. Sometimes we get stopped in our tracks of implementing our dreams because we feel like our dreams are not big enough to be nurtured, and we are shy because our dreams are not to save the world. But I think the responsibility is not to save the world. The responsibility is to help the person next to you, one other person, or 20 other people. Last week I was talking about how you have to be organized to do more than just living your daily life and carrying your daily responsibilities. What creating time for yourself does is to give you time to check your own privilege. Unchecked privilege can be selfish and dangerous. But as you get to check your privilege, you develop compassion, love, and a desire to do more and be more. I challenge you to reflect on what it is you dream about and on how that dream can change some of the societal challenges that we have in this country and in the world. The truth is, we all have something, and it is working with what we have. That is the first step we need to take. Work with what you have and see where that takes you, and see the small change that you can make and be the change you want to see. I know it's easier said than done to figure out what it is you want to do. So next week, I'll be talking to a trend translator, and she will be talking to us about trends and how looking at trends can empower you to figure out your next move. I would love to hear from you. Please share your thoughts, ideas, and experiences with me on ellendlovu.com or send an email to womanifesto@ellendlovu.com. Until next week, thank you and God bless.